Should gay people in Maine be allowed to marry? It could be up to you. Same-sex marriage is an issue that's been put before Maine voters in the past, and it looks as though it will be on the ballot once again this November. Mainers last weighed in 3 years ago, approving a people's veto measure that overturned the state's same-sex marriage law. But advocates believe they've gathered enough signatures for a new initiative. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll hear from representatives on both sides of the debate and explore possible solutions to a question that's been posed in the courts and at polls around the country. We'd like to hear from you. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post a message on our Maine Calling Facebook page. Same-sex marriage. Where do we go from here? This is Maine Calling. And welcome to our in-studio guests, Mary Bonato, Civil Rights Project Director of the Boston-based Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, and Brian Suchet, Director of the Office for the Promotion and Defense of Marriage, Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off with a big question, a vision question. Mary Bonato, if Maine approves same-sex marriage this time around and sustains it, what will Maine look like 10 years from now?
Well, in all the states where same-sex couples can marry, what we initially see is an outbreak of happiness because marriage is so important to people. And the idea that after decades of commitment, they can finally marry, there's a lot of joy in that and family celebrating with them and so on. Over the long term, I think we have Massachusetts as an example where we've had marriage almost 8 years. What you see in terms of brass tacks is a lot of continuity, except there are more people who are married. Marriage rates have gone up, which I think is expected. There has been some increased tax revenue because there are obviously more weddings and more businesses and benefit from that. But I think really what you see is there are more families that now have marriage as an anchor in their lives so that they have that public commitment and that expectation in the community. And I think that's a good thing for families overall. There hasn't been the predictions, you know, the predictions that have been made just have not really come to bear, the flood of lawsuits and so on.
Brian Suchet, same question to you. If same-sex marriage is approved here in Maine, what does Maine look like 10 years from now?
Yeah, I think the bigger question is what happens in a society and a culture that fails to defend marriage for what it is? Right now we live in a country where the out-of-wedlock birth rate is 40%. In the black community, it's almost two-thirds. It's no surprise that 92% of families on welfare, TANF, are single-parent families, mostly by mothers. Of those, only 12% receive the child support they have coming to us. These are all the direct result of a culture that doesn't defend marriage. This attempt to redefine marriage is not the only threat to marriage. No-fault divorce, huge threat to marriage. Cohabitation, huge threat to marriage. The Catholic Church has been speaking about these threats to marriage for decades. So what you can expect to see if we fail to promote marriage for what it is probably continuing out-of-wedlock birth rates, continuing a need for the state to get involved in families where there has been a marital breakdown because mothers and fathers and the culture at large doesn't protect marriage for what it is.
But so to follow up on that, is the problem with marriage as you're describing it, are you saying that, that sort of disconnect and that lack of respect for marriage is going to be heightened by adding same-sex marriage?
The issue at hand, redefining marriage, would not even be an issue if we lived in a culture that properly understood what marriage is and what it is for. This is just piling on. This is another movement in the wrong direction. We need to step back and think about what marriage is, what it has meant to society, as the building block, the foundation of a just society. That's what we need to be looking at.
Let's look at some of the nuts and bolts of where we are. So as we mentioned, in 2009, the Maine legislature approved a same-sex marriage law. It was signed by then-Governor John Baldacci. Opponents launched a petition drive for a so-called people's veto. They were successful in getting that onto the ballot, and in the end, they were successful in getting that passed. So in essence, that law was overturned by the people in 2009. Mary Bonato, why return to this issue again now if it was decided in 2009?
Well, Maine certainly has a track record of visiting issues a few times. And really, the reason here is because marriage is so important. After the campaign in 2009, we continued what we had been doing before, which is talking to people around the state. And as we continued those conversations, we found, unsurprisingly, that we have a lot of common ground about marriage being a unique commitment where people pledge responsibility for one another. They expect this to be forever. They want to make that pledge, that unique promise, in front of their family and friends. And I think when people began more and more to put themselves in the shoes of gay people and think about the gay people they knew and what it would mean to them if they had been denied marriage and what it means to their friends and family members who were denied marriage, what we've seen is people continuing to think about this and really come around. What we keep seeing is the one constant is change, and that more and more people have been reexamining their feelings and finding a path to support us on this.
Brian Suchet, has public sentiment toward same-sex marriage changed since 2009, or from where you sit, does it matter because it's not a matter of public opinion?
Well, here's the fundamental truth of marriage that we all need to understand. Marriage unites a man and a woman with each other and any children born from their union. Marriage is not simply about adult wants for public affirmation or state-sponsored benefits. That is not what marriage is about. When we attempt to remove the procreative aspect of marriage, the child-rearing element of marriage, when we make the claim that mothers and fathers don't matter in the lives of children, that's a very dangerous claim to make for society. I do not believe that people have really moved on this issue, because I think fundamentally they understand the purpose of marriage.
But politically, we've seen states adopting, you know, more and more states adopting, and I think the count is now 7 with the addition of Washington State, if that is sustained. Is public opinion changing, Mary Bonanno? Is that chronicled in what we're seeing in other states?
Well, in 2011, for the first time nationwide, we saw numerous polls that have been tracking the issue for years saying that majorities of Americans support the freedom to marry. And you're seeing that in the states. And then in Maine, as I said, people have really had a chance to wrestle this with this issue. They understand it's extremely personal and how consequential it is. And one of the things we were also able to do is hear their concerns. And one concern we heard, for example, was because of the last campaign, people were worried that churches would lose their tax exemptions or that clergy would be forced to marry people. Well, that's easy to fix, you know, since it's not going to happen anyway. That's the kind of thing that we could just address explicitly in the law. And on the procreative piece, I just need to say that we have to remember we're talking here about the government and government allowing marriage licenses for same-sex couples. And right now, there's just no requirement from the government that you procreate, or if you're 80 years old, that you have to procreate or so on. What the state is doing is licensing marriage, not child-rearing.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Brian Suchet, back to this issue of public sentiment. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it wouldn't matter to the church whether 99% of the population were in favor of changing to allowing same-sex marriage.
Well, I don't think you'll ever see that. Look, there's an objective reality to marriage, and that's kind of what we're talking about. As to what the state talks about marriage, this is what the state right now, the government, claims about marriage. The union of one man and one woman joined in traditional monogamous marriage is of inestimable value to society. The state has a compelling interest to nurture and promote the unique institution of traditional monogamous marriage in support of harmonious families and the physical and mental health of children. It is very clear that in the state of Maine right now, children are an integral part of marriage. Where do children come from? Children come from men and women. Children come from mothers and fathers. So to make the claim that the state has no interest in marriage being connected to children is patently false.
How much of this is an argument, though, about the definition of the word marriage? In other words, are we debating whether it's okay for same-sex couples to create families and have the same protections under the law? Or is this a debate about the cultural definition of marriage?
It's a debate about marriage, because I think the alternatives that are out there, civil unions, give people the rights. You know, there is nothing like marriage. There's no other substitute for that public commitment and affirmation. So clearly, when you're giving something else, you're giving something else. It's not the same thing. And again, the reason government is important here is because while there are faiths on both sides of this issue, the issue in this for this bill that the people will be considering is whether the government should allow marriage licenses. The language that Brian read, I'm quite familiar with. It was from an initiated bill in 1997. That's something that the legislature signed off on. But clearly here, when we're talking about kids and we're talking about the welfare of children, I have to ask how it helps any child being raised in a same-sex family to have that family denied the protections that come with marriage and the security of knowing that your parents are married.
Let's bring in a caller here. Miriam is calling from Brunswick. Hi, Miriam. Welcome to the program.
Why, thank you very much. I have a question for Mary. Mary, if you knew, based on credible, you know, broadly accepted peer review social science data that radically redefining marriage was harmful to society, would you still be in favor of it?
Well, I think I know where this question is going, because I know there's peer-reviewed literature out there about what happens when kids don't have good parents. But what I also know is that the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Psychological Association, Psychiatric Association, on and on, have said what matters for child outcomes is that their parents are good parents and dedicated to their welfare. And it's not about sex, and it's not about sexual orientation, and there's 50 years of data. So some people will nitpick that data all they want, but you don't have to take it from me. You can take it from these other organizations that say, and I think hopefully your own experience confirms, that children who are being raised by gay and lesbian parents are doing just fine.
Miriam, is there a specific study that you're pointing to?
I haven't been able to find any study at all that supports the benefits of same-sex marriage to society. I don't even think we've had it around long enough. I think we're moving way too fast. Personally, I hate unintentional consequences. So that's my biggest concern is for children, for society. I'm throwing in religious freedom now. I just think we're moving way too fast.
Well, Miriam, one thing that we can certainly do when this campaign actually moves into gear is make sure that we make available information for people like you who have those questions, which are fair questions, so that you can satisfy yourself, because there is, in fact, plenty of data out there.
Miriam, thanks very much. 1-800-399-3566. And to Karen in New Sharon. Hey, that rhymes. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just have a couple comments, I think. First off, we're looking at the whole, I mean, some of the arguments against gay marriage seem to be focused on the children. But regardless of whether gay marriage exists or not, these children are still part of gay families, and they deserve the protections that marriage provides those families, first. Second, I know several families who have gay parents, and when they decide to have children, it is a very intentional decision. It's not a biological accident that, oops, you know, I just had a baby, I didn't realize I was going to get pregnant. These families are really thinking about everything that goes into childhood, and they deserve to be protected. And I guess that's all I have to say.
All right, Karen, thanks for calling.
Can I comment on that? Well, first of all, no one has a right to a child. Okay, let's establish that up front. If there's a right out there, it's the right of a child to be known and loved by the mother and father who brought him into this world. I mean, everyone in this studio, everyone in the listening audience is born of a mother and a father. That is an undeniable fact. So as far as children being raised by two moms or two dads, we have to acknowledge that when they're placed in those households, and they have to be placed because they can't be born of both of those individuals, they are intentionally being denied either a mother or a father. Now, if you believe that mothers or fathers, particularly biological parents, are irrelevant to the lives of children, then you probably have no problems redefining marriage. However, if you do believe that biological parents, the two people who brought that child into this world, matter, then start defending marriage for what it is.
And can I just comment on Brian's comment, if I may, please? You know, we don't have to be so extreme as to say things like mothers and fathers don't matter. What we are talking about when we're talking about child welfare is, in fact, there are a lot of kids who don't have parents, who need parents and people are willing to adopt them, gay and non-gay. We're talking about a lot of married heterosexual couples who are not able to conceive on their own and bring children into their families in other ways through the use of technology, including in the state of Maine. And we're talking about same-sex couples who also have a desire to nurture the next generation and slog their guts out raising kids and being there for their kids. And what we're, when we're talking about kids, let's focus on their welfare and not all this other, these other sort of scare terms about kids not having mothers and fathers, or you're talking about denying fathers or denying mothers.
Well, that's
not
exactly
the point.
Here's a statistic that's undeniable. 100% of humanity, every single person born is born of a mother and a father. We will never get away from that. So either you believe that mothers and fathers matter in the lives of children, or quite frankly, you don't.
Quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, send us an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, and while you're there, friend us or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Back in a minute.
I'm Marco Werman. Iowa has lost thousands of jobs to China, so when China's next president makes a pit stop there this week, you'd expect some grumbling. But some locals see opportunity. They want China to invest in Iowa.
Money's supposed to work that way, isn't it? You spend it, it goes to China, try to bring it back in.
Bringing Chinese investment to Iowa, next time on The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, America's coming apart around money and morals, says Charles Murray. He's sparked a great debate about why. We'll hear it. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point this evening at midnight.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. On today's program, the debate over same-sex marriage in Maine. And with me in the studio, Brian Suchet, Director for the Office for the Promotion of Defense of Marriage, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland, and Mary Bonato, Civil Rights Project Director, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment or question on our Facebook page. And let's go to Chris in Lewiston. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
I'm wondering if the goal of the campaign for marriage equality is all the rights that opposite-sex couples get when they get married, wouldn't it be an easier thing to just give the rights to everyone regardless of their marital status instead of hitching rights to whether you're married or not, because getting married isn't always what all gay people want to do?
I agree with you. Not all people want to marry whether they're gay or non-gay, as we know. And, you know, rights and protection is important. There's no reason they have to be tied to marriage. But what we're talking about is right now joining in marriage and making that unique commitment that is made in marriage in front of your family and friends, where you're pledging to do this for the long haul, despite the ups and downs that you're going to face in life. It is something that has been part of our nation from the beginning. It is something that it's just a shared understanding that we all have, and it's something that many gay people want to participate in. It doesn't foreclose that other conversation about what is the right policy about whether or not somebody should be able to take family medical leave when their sister's sick. You can have that conversation, but we're talking about marriage in this conversation.
And Maine already has domestic partner protections.
It has limited domestic partnership protections, yes.
Which is what we're talking about in that basic legal level, whether you're married or not.
If marriage were simply about demands for rights, I'd say there's an argument there. Look, I've never known a married couple, myself included, where the husband-to-be on bended knees said to his spouse, honey, I really want to marry you for the rights or privileges or the state-sponsored benefits of marriage. That's an absurd notion. Marriage is about uniting men and women with each other and the children born from their union. That is it. And that's what people have in mind when they enter the institution of marriage. It's not whether I can file my taxes jointly. to the extent that there may be demands, legitimate demands, those can be handled separately. We don't need to redefine marriage simply in order to, you know, do some of the things that are being asked.
Well, nobody's here talking about redefining marriage. What we're talking about is joining in the institution of marriage as it exists and accepting those responsibilities.
Is part of what's happening here a collision of sort of the religious community, which claims ownership of the concept of marriage, that is, it has to be the marriage of two people in the eyes of God or in our Judeo-Christian tradition, that's sort of blended together with the legal notions and rights of a legal marriage, and that's what we're sort of trying to figure out here.
Yeah, I think you're making a very false distinction. The Catholic Church, for example, does not claim ownership of marriage. We've been in the marriage business for 2,000 years, but guess what? Before the Catholic Church, there was marriage. Before the Jewish faith, there was marriage. In ancient pagan societies, there was marriage. Before the state, before the country, so on and so forth, there was marriage. Marriage is an institution that's naturally occurring. Marriage is an institution between men and women that commits them to each other. It's part of who we are. It's part of the objective reality of being human. Religion did not invent marriage. Certainly, state did not invent marriage. So to attempt to redefine it is kind of a fool's errand.
But it just seems that when the church is always out front on this issue, and therefore it becomes identified as a sort of a religious issue, even by default.
No, and on the religious side, I mean, you know, there is the religious right of marriage, and, you know, there's certain faiths that have, you know, understandably have their own restrictions, have their own beliefs about who can marry within that faith tradition. So we have, you know, for example, the churches that will not marry somebody who's been divorced. We have churches that will not conduct interfaith ceremonies. That is absolutely their prerogative. But on the other hand, we have government licensing of marriage. And in that situation, if you're an adult and you're not married and you're not closely related and you're willing to accept those responsibilities and make that commitment, you may marry. And that is what same-sex couples are seeking in this state, is the right to get a government marriage license.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation to Peaks Island and Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I've got a question for Mr. Boucher. How do you explain the fact that Massachusetts, which has had the lowest divorce rate or among the lowest divorce rates in the nation for many years, in 2004, the year before marriage equality occurred, the divorce rate in Massachusetts was 2.2 per 1,000 population. That is, for every 1,000 people, 2.2 divorces occurred. 7 years later, the divorce rate in Massachusetts is 1.8 per 1,000, a reduction of almost 20%. Given the dire predictions of what the institution of basically including gay and lesbian couples in the institution of marriage with heterosexual couples, you know, the evidence in Massachusetts is that it certainly hasn't harmed the state of marriage, and in fact, one might perhaps argue that there's at least some evidence that it's actually been improved.
Yeah, Robert,
divorce rates.
Yeah, let's let our guest respond.
Yeah, there's an old saying in social science research that correlation does not prove causation. In other words, you could claim that two numbers rise and fall together. That does not mean that one causes the other. If you really want to take a close look at Massachusetts, a lot of other questions need to be answered before you can come to a conclusion. What is the marriage rate? Has the marriage rate gone up and down? Has the cohabitation rate gone up or down? Are fewer people marrying? So there's a lot more to that issue. So you can draw conclusions if you so choose. But I don't think we're ready to take the leap based on what's happened in Massachusetts or hasn't happened in Massachusetts.
Mary Bonato, is there any real empirical evidence to sort of study Massachusetts and come out with scientific connections that suggest it affects one way or the other?
Well, I'll just say this. You know, in the last campaign, there were ads, you know, with various dire predictions. And those predictions just have not come to bear in any state. I do know the data on marital rates in Massachusetts, and it's been fairly consistent since the time we've had marriage. But I would agree with Brian that over the long term is sort of a more appropriate way to study this. But certainly, there is no evidence out there that any dire consequences are going to befall marriage. Again, remember, we're talking about people joining in the commitment of marriage and making that promise to be responsible for each other, that has got to be a good thing for society.
All right, 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. To Oakland we go. And Laura, hi, Laura. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. My question is for Mary Bonato. I was wondering, there's a UN document on the rights of the child that states that a child has a right to know his or her parents. How would you, as a matter of logic, reconcile the right children born to a lesbian couple through anonymous sperm donation to know their biological father versus the perceived right of the couple, lesbian couple, to have a child under these circumstances?
Thanks for your question, Laura. And I guess I would just also ask that we widen the lens a little bit. I have to go back and look at that document. I'm sorry I didn't look at it before the show. But, you know, you have to remember that there are many people who are using reproductive technologies. The primary consumers of reproductive technologies are heterosexual people who want to have children and can have them on their own. And to the extent this UN document even speaks to this issue that you're talking about, it's a broader issue. I mean, there are many people who want to bring children into their lives and do so through adoption or through these technologies. And I think when we're talking about the welfare of children, it'd be great if we could focus on the adults being good parents as opposed to, you know, the actual technical biological connection. If it exists, great. You know, good for you. But if there's other ways that you bring children into your lives, then so be it.
We have a tweet from listener Brian who tweets, "Biological parentage does not equate the best for the children. If you doubt this, ask abused kids." Brian Suchet, what about this idea that committed gay couples are in many cases really good parents, are sort of motivated to create family in a way that I think they would say could only be good, when so many biological parents are fighting and causing problems for each other?
And I know, and you say so many, but you don't have a number. Here's the problem. We want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We want to say that because the ideal that we're attempting to achieve, which is mothers and fathers united in raising the children that are born of their union, because there are faults, because we are human, we are all fallen, and it doesn't work out in 100% of the situation, that we need to abandon marriage. Mary talks about there are no dire consequences to marriage if we redefine it. Well, by redefining it, you've eliminated marriage as we understand it. The dire consequence is that it no longer exists in the state of being that it was. We do need to focus on children, and we do need to focus on the rights of children to be known and loved by the two people who brought them into this world. And where that fails, there's a tragedy. Okay, no one is denying that, but it would be a further tragedy to then take that child away from those biological parents who could not raise the child and now place them in an environment where they will never know a mother or a father again.
Mary?
Yeah, I think we may have exhausted this topic. I mean, I think, there's just this reality that there are many non-gay people who are also bringing children into their lives in many ways. And what I keep hearing is, well, it's only the gay people who don't bring children into their families in the correct way, so they shouldn't be able to get married. Well, if the issue is then you could only marry if you were able to procreate, then let's see somebody support those rules. We don't support those rules, but I don't think anybody supports those rules. So I just have to question whether this really is the standard that we're talking about here. Same-sex couples are making a commitment to one another. They are the two who are marrying. That's what we are seeking.
Yeah, sorry. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Green, and Lou is on the phone. Hi, Lou.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I do have a question about the use of the term redefining marriage. Marriage has been redefined throughout history many times, from the days when a husband and wife might never have met until their wedding day, when the marriage was an arrangement by committee, when the concept of love in a marriage was unheard of, when a husband could be charged with rape, could not be charged with raping his wife in spite of abuse, when the wife and children were the property of the husband. As we learn more about the human condition, we learn more about how we treat other human beings. Could you please address this? Thank you.
Sure. Once again, you go back and throughout the history of mankind, you point to abuses that may have occurred. And based on that, your conclusion is that we need to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, your assertion that love was unheard of in marriage, first of all, that is absolute revisionist history. That's ridiculous. I mean, we can read about marriage throughout all of human history, and the element of love has always been there. Also, the element of a man and a woman has always been part of marriage. So this is a radical redefinition of marriage, as another caller described it.
Well, and I do have a comment about that. I mean, I don't think any of us is historians, but I've certainly read enough to realize that many of the changes that have happened in marriage over time went to the heart of the institution as people understood it at that time, that men were, it was Mr. and Mrs. him. That's it. She had no legal rights and so on. That marriage was same race. You had judges saying things like Almighty God created the races, various colors, and separated them, showing that he did not intend for them to mix. I mean, these are things that were so deeply felt and understood. And there were certainly religious perspectives that segregation had to be maintained in marriage and segregation theology. So I think the caller has a fair point that marriage has changed many times. And we're still talking, ultimately, though, about a commitment of two people.
Lou, you get the last comment here before we break.
Has not always been a part of society. There are many documents, the current book out, Homosexuality, The Invention of Homosexuality. Please do your research. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, it's a free-for-all out there. So I decided to give it a try.
Finally, a lot of vanilla.
That's like a gallon of vanilla.
It's about a gallon of vanilla.
It's about a half a cup, but I mean, most recipes are like a quarter teaspoon.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, baking with baby cakes, next time on Marketplace. Also, the day's business news and the numbers as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
You can join us for Marketplace this evening at 6:30. Join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today's guest is Robert Reich, professor of public policy at UC Berkeley and former U.S. Secretary of Labor, also author of Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. Reich shares his thoughts on the current administration, the nation's economy, and its cloudy future as another presidential election looms. That's Commonwealth Club of California. The guest is Robert Reich. This afternoon at 1 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Today on the program, same-sex marriage in Maine. Share your thoughts, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, paste to our Facebook page, or post to our Facebook page, rather, or send us a tweet at Maine Calling. Our guests, Brian Suchet, Director of the Office for the Promotion and Defense of Marriage, Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland, and Mary Bonato, Civil Rights Project Director, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. We've been talking for the last half hour here about differences of opinion, a real departure in the basic sort of answers to these questions. Is there any way that these two sides might be able to find a compromise in this era when compromise seems to be a dirty word that would satisfy both? Or is it a winner-take-all kind of a debate?
Well, I have to say, I think when it comes to marriage, there's just no compromise on the government allowing same-sex couples to marry. But I will say that having listened to people throughout the state, we did hear concerns about, you know, would clergy be forced to do something they don't want to do? Would churches be required to host marriages? Would churches lose their tax-exempt status? We could address those concerns. We address them specifically in the bill, and they add to the kinds of religious exemptions that we already have in Maine law. So I think what we're trying to do is to say that the government has to be fair to everybody. This is a huge thing to be able to marry or not. Put yourself in the shoes of a gay person who can't marry, and we are doing what we can to protect the religious freedoms that need to be protected.
I think the two views of marriage are mutually exclusive. This is why we claim that the view that's being proposed is a redefinition of marriage. The two can't exist side by side. In Mary's view of marriage is about, you know, public demands for affirmation, state-sponsored benefits of any two people, regardless. In the traditional, the historical, the cultural, the legal understanding of marriage, it's about uniting men and women to each other and any children born in their union. The two views of marriage simply cannot exist as one connected view.
Are you concerned that stance will guarantee almost a perpetual political fight over this in terms of...
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have religious diversity in this country. I mean, not every faith takes the view that Brian's, you know, official church does. You know, there are many, many people of faith in different religious bodies that support the freedom to marry. And I think people understand there is a difference. Brian doesn't want there to be a difference, but there is a difference between what religions can do and the kinds of ways they can exclude people if they want based on their doctrine compared to what the government does. So again, we just ask people to please consider what it would mean for you not to be able to make this commitment at all, even by your government, or if your church supports your marriage, that it cannot give you, it cannot certify that license.
I have yet to express a view based on my religious belief or dogma. The vision of marriage that I articulated is an objective reality of what marriage is and always has been. I have to repeat, the Catholic Church didn't invent marriage. The state of Maine didn't invent marriage. Marriage is. Marriage exists, you know, our very maleness and femaleness. The fact that this is where the next generation comes from, that's what marriage is all about. If we remove those elements from marriage, you can call it marriage. The objective reality remains. All you've done is obscured the truth.
Let's go to Lewiston and David. Hi, David.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I just want to point out that I think that the bottom line of the argument is that there is a distinction between the marriage sacrament and the marriage license. I believe that, I mean, our government is about separation of church and state. And one of the things that I think we need to realize is that the state law should be written in such a way that it honors all the religious institutions. There are plenty of other institutions out there who would like to define the marriage sacrament in a way that encompasses all communities. I think we're in a position where the Catholic Church it really has nailed the definition of marriage and is trying to impose it upon the government. So.
You know what, David? I can go back throughout history. The Catholic Church has been around for about 2,000 years, but outside of history and other pagan cultures, certainly before the Catholic Church existed, marriage has been what I described it to be. Like I just said, I have yet to articulate a viewpoint of marriage that was not secular. My viewpoint of marriage is not simply based on the Catholic Church determined. Look, it's not true because the Catholic Church says it. The Catholic Church simply professes it because it's true.
And you can profess that within the sacrament of marriage, but the difference between what you profess should be only professed within the realm of your religion and not imposed on the other beliefs of other religions, such as Universalists, Unitarians, or other churches.
And once again, my perspective has yet to be dogmatic or religious. I have yet to articulate the Catholic Church's sacramental nature of marriage.
Well, can I differ?
Go ahead.
You know, Brian, you're talking about pagan societies or pre-Catholic Church or whatever. I mean, you know, men and women have been making babies for a long time before marriage, too. And so your argument that marriage existed before doesn't prove anything because reproduction existed before, too. Again, we're talking about what the state's going to license, and we're trying to provide and have explicitly provided in this for no lawsuits and no liability for a religious clergy member who doesn't want to perform a marriage or for an institution that doesn't want to host one. So we are really... You know, I believe trying to figure out a way to make sure that the government honors its promise to treat all people equally, that people can participate in this commitment of marriage, and at the same time respect religious freedom.
Let's go to Otis and Larry. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the program.
Well, the gentleman has said that people have never gotten married before economic and state reasons. My ex-wife was is a homosexual. And the Catholic Church does not recognize divorce. It requires you to annul it, which costs money within the Catholic Church. My present wife and I wanted to get married in the Catholic Church in Castine. We wanted to get married by Father Gaffney, and he could not do it because the Catholic Church decided that we are not officially divorced within the Catholic system. And so my wife and I decided to get married anyway, because of, as he denied, there are considerable economic benefits and there are considerable state benefits to being married. When I'm in the hospital, my wife gets to see me and other such things. And he says he does not, he has claimed he has not involved the Catholic Church in his definitions, but he has done it so repeatedly. And that's, I guess, about all I have to say.
Well, so was there a statement? Or I wasn't sure if that was a statement. Well, here, let me just
I think he's questioning. You're saying that you're not coming from a place of religious dogma.
But no, I'm not. And actually, there are a couple of falsehoods there. One is the annulment process within the church is not just Catholic divorce. I'm not going to go into that because I am not talking about the Catholic Church's sole vision of marriage. But the notion that you need money in order to appeal for an annulment is patently false. So let's clarify that. The church does not demand money from people in order to seek an annulment. Okay, that's not true. Was there another element of this conversation that...
Larry, is there a specific question?
I'm just saying that unquestionably the Catholic Church requests money if you ask for an annulment.
That's not true.
The Catholic Church.
That's not true.
Unquestionably true.
It is not.
They requested it of them.
Okay. It is not. They may request it, but they will never deny the annulment process, and it is a process to those who can't afford it. You look them in the eye and you say, I cannot afford to pay for the expenses associated with, and the Catholic Church says, okay, let's move forward.
Let's get back to same-sex marriage for today's program.
Well,
and
yeah, sounds good.
And on moving forward, I think the callers have really shown what we found when we were talking to voters in the last 2 years and when we were gathering signatures, which is that people have been changing their minds as they get more information and as they continue to think about it.
All right, let's go out of the country, New Brunswick, Canada, and David. Hi, David.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was just listening to you, to the conversation, and I got to tell you, just right off the top of off the bat, I mean, just from a pure respect of the other person's opinion, Mary, you've won this one. I just can't believe the language that Brian presents his arguments with, or defense of his arguments with, just statements and phrases like "that's absurd" and "that's ridiculous." Come on, I mean. For you to say that everybody has a mother and a father, to coin your phrase, is absurd and ridiculous. The mention of in vitro fertilization and these sorts of things has already been presented. I mean, to say that these people don't have a mother and a father, or have a mother and a father, is absurd and ridiculous. So what do we do about these people?
All right, let's let our guests respond here before we run out of time.
Yeah, the one thing I hear a lot is intolerance in the name of tolerance. You're not the first person to make the claim that those who defend marriage as a union of a man and a woman are full of hatred, they're full of bigotry, they're intolerant people. I can't believe the language that you people use. And yet that is quite often the language that is thrown at many people who defend marriage for what it is. So, I mean, you feel that my position is absurd and ridiculous, and that certainly you're entitled to your opinion.
Well, and I have to say, you know, before we start down the road of hatred and bigotry, I didn't hear the gentleman use those terms, and I think it's got to be okay for us to share our views and disagree with one another, and that's not the same thing as calling somebody names.
And on that, we're out of time. It's gone very quickly. Brian, Mary, thank you both for joining us. Brian Suchet, Director of the Office for the Promotion and Defense of Marriage, Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland, and Mary Bonato, Civil Rights Project Director, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We also had help from Rich Tozier and the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.